What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Israel has been engaged in an intensified siege of northern Gaza, some say in preparation to quote-unquote resettle the area. Joining us to discuss that and more is Rami Kurdi, a distinguished public policy fellow at the American University of Beirut and a journalist and author with 50 years of experience covering the Middle East. For days, well, weeks now, actually, it's been about 3 weeks, Israeli strikes across Gaza have intensified, especially in the north, upwards of 700 people murdered. Of course, we always know that those numbers are an undercount. Just yesterday, 20 murdered as the IDF has engaged in both air and ground intensives surrounding hospitals, refugee shelters, and ordering folks to head south. First of all, what more should my listeners understand about the conditions in the north right now?
Well, the conditions are pretty unprecedented in the entire world, which is a deliberate siege and a starvation siege, not letting in food, water, medicine, anything that people need to physically live. And this is announced by the Israeli government. It's supported by the vast majority of Israeli people. I'm sure not Jews around the world, because Jews around the world are not as fanatic as the Israeli government or the people in Israel, who for some reason have adopted this genocidal policy. And it's a policy of extermination, not just killing people or destroying their facilities, but making it impossible for them to live in Gaza. And this is the aim of the process underway. And it has been the aim of Zionism since it started about 120 years ago, which is to remove the Palestinians as much as possible from Palestine, the Arab Palestinians, to make room for a Jewish state. The colonial British regime signed on to this, issued the Balfour Declaration, put it into the 1923 mandate from the League of Nations for England to run that space, and from 1923 to 1947, from 1917 to 1947, Britain ran the oversaw mandated Palestine and helped the Zionist war machine drive out the Palestinians and absorb more Jewish immigrants, and that brought us the state of Israel, and here we are today. So this is not a new process. This has been going on for over a century. What's new is the severity, the savagery, the public nature of this process, and the gloating by many Israelis, not all of them, but many Israelis are gloating about this and showing it on social media. And it's inhuman. And it's not like something that we've seen before virtually anywhere in the world. We've had genocides where people are driven out, were killed, or something, but we've never had a situation, as far as I can see, where people have tried to totally eliminate a group of people, in this case the Palestinians, to drive them out of their lands, destroy everything there, and make that place unlivable for them. So this is what's going on. The details, of course, will change every day. They bomb a school, they stop a relief truck, they bomb a water system, whatever. This has been going on for the last year and more. But even before that, Gaza has been under siege for 20 years or so, and by the Israelis. And they've been doing this for many, many years, but never at the intensity that they're doing it at now.
So you would agree, Rami Kurdi, with what I've heard other folks say, is that as hard as it is to believe, this iteration of this intensive is the worst that it's been over this last year.
Yes. I mean, we've never seen anything quite like this. We've seen other savage actions and crimes by the Israelis, supported almost fully by the United States, by the way, which is another important aspect of this. The Israelis have done atrocious things in the last year. They claim it all in the name of defending themselves. Most of the world doesn't agree with that. They think that Israel is going way too far, and that it can better defend itself by having a ceasefire and negotiating a long-term peace agreement, which Hamas has offered, by the way, at least 10 times to the U.S., to the Israelis, to the U.N. So this is a historic moment of deprivation of the human spirit. What the Israelis are doing is degrading what it means to be a human. Both the Palestinians and the Israelis themselves are both degraded by this process. The fascinating role I see is the role of the United States. Why is the United States and England and Germany and a few others, but especially the U.S., openly, fervently, passionately, sincerely, why are U.S. officials constantly saying Israel has a right to defend itself, we will support it, there's no daylight between us? If there's no daylight between the U.S. government and Israel, then the U.S. is complicit in one of the worst genocides of modern history. But the U.S. keeps doing this. And I think one of the puzzles that we all have to solve is, why is this happening in American foreign policy? The United States is not an evil society. The United States people are good people. There are criminals among them, but the vast majority don't want to be part of a genocide. And that's why these protests are erupting all over the place. But despite the protests and the UN votes and everything else, the U.S. government sticks to its position. We're going to support Israel, and whatever Israel does to defend itself, we're there. And they issue these Tony Blinken make-believe blank statements that, oh, the Israelis have to increase humanitarian aid. And he's made 10 trips to the Middle East, Tony Blinken and the American Foreign Secretary, and every time he makes a trip, things get worse and the war expands to Lebanon and to Iran and other places. My only explanation is, we are witnessing here two things. We're witnessing the extreme genocidal activities of the Israeli government and military forces, and we're witnessing the affirmation by the United States that it is, in fact, a neo-imperial power, that what they're practicing is a form of imperialism. Without conquering people's lands, they want to dominate whatever people think anywhere around the world, and they're doing it, in this case, with the Israelis. But the United States is also proving that it's an amateur in imperialism. It doesn't do imperialism with the way the French and the British did it years ago, where they claim that they can help people and build railroads and schools and this and that. And the United States is an amateur because it focuses almost totally on military tools or sanctions, and it has totally outsourced its imperial aims, which is to have indirect influence or dominance in the Middle East. They've outsourced that to a savage Israeli government that's doing the actual genocidal work. This is a huge historical, political, psychological challenge that all of us have to work on to understand better than we understood the Holocaust, because we obviously didn't understand the Holocaust sufficiently to stop it from happening again, despite the never again phrases and all these, and the trials and all the things that happened that we thought would stop genocides from happening. But they're not only happening, they're being done by the US and Israel, and they're put on TV and social media every day. It's just completely incomprehensible. And I don't know what the answer is, but I know that we have to understand it better, and we can only do that together.
There's so many threads in there I want to tug on, but I'm going to divert myself from where I was going to go, because Rami, you said, you know, the U.S. is not an evil society and that there's lots of good Americans here, and I would agree there's lots of good people. That said, I go back to Dr. King's 1967 speech, which is still true, right? The United States is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world. And there's a reason why Black freedom fighters like myself and others have long identified in solidarity with the Palestinian freedom struggle, right? Because we understand colonialism. It's why indigenous people identify with the Palestinian freedom struggle, because right. This is what the United States does and has done, right, you know, since its inception. And I think one of the conversations that we've been having with Corey Peterson Smith on this show is that one of the things, who I know you spoke to, I think, last week, one of the things that this really highlights, I think for all of us, black folks and other folks of color, right, is that the darker your skin, the less human you are seen as. And there's an unapologeticness of dehumanizing, murdering, wiping out, you know, not non-white peoples. And the world will largely allow that to happen.
Yeah.
Because in my opinion, none of us should be doing anything but fighting for Palestinian freedom. Because when Palestine is free, all of us get free, right?
Right. And like Black Lives Matter, like Me Too, like climate justice, these are universal global battles that will help the whole world. And everybody's suffering from this except some very few rich, mostly white males. But that's how... So what I meant is the United States government is doing criminal acts and has done criminal acts for decades and decades and around the world. But the United States people individually are not evil people. They're not. There are racists, there are bigots, there are killers. But overall, daily life in the U.S. when you run into your neighbors, wherever you are, whoever they may be, they're generally normal, decent people, all of whom suffer from the problems of distorted development and advantages that white males have. And the country was founded by slave-owning white old men, landowning, and they proved to, over the years, to support racist regimes, apartheid regimes. But it's the government that I'm talking about. The government of the United States has proven itself to be largely an imperial power that has no hesitation to destroy countries, get involved in wars around the world where it has no idea what it's doing, like Vietnam and Afghanistan and Iraq, and now possibly they're going to be fighting in Iran and Lebanon, whatever. But the divergence between the decency of most Americans, which I've experienced all my life, and whether they're Jews or black or white or Muslim, it doesn't matter. This is a society of decent people run by a criminal-oriented imperial government, for the most part. Mm. There are decent people in government, too. We shouldn't, not everybody in government. But the powers that make decisions are powers that like apartheid, they like warfare, they like the U.S. dominating the world, but they don't know how to do it very well. They're really amateurs at this, and we're the ones who suffer. But all Americans are going to suffer because the impact of what Israel is doing is going to come back and has started to hurt the fundamental principles of this country, even though those principles are not always implemented, like free speech, like equal rights, like due process. But now you're getting Congress passing laws that will punish universities who allow professors to teach a course on, say, Palestinian history or colonialism. It's unbelievable that the reach of the pro-Israeli extremist skinheads has now reached into universities, libraries, civic centers, that any activity in the United States that seems to give a platform for people advocating for equal rights for Palestinians and Israelis. And I stress the equal rights. We're not advocating to destroy Israel, as most of the lying politicians and polemicists do here in the U.S. and the media especially. Nobody is trying to destroy Israel, not Hamas, not everybody. They're trying to resist Israel's oppression, to force it to negotiate a long-term resolution that gives the Israelis and the Palestinians their national rights and sovereignty and security. But the pro-Israeli influence in the media and government is so intense in the United States that it overrides all those decent Americans and basically brings us to the position we were in now, where the genocide in Gaza and the expansion into Lebanon and other places is seen widely by the entire world, certainly by most of them at least, as a joint American-Israeli joint venture. And this can only be bad for the United States.
Ramakrishnan, you alluded to this a little bit earlier, but I want to tug on the thread a little harder. Your reaction to the assertion that Israel is doing this to clear the area so they can begin to illegally resettle. Blinken says the United States rejects this policy, and from his understanding, that's not the policy of the Israeli government either. I'll stop there, and I'll let you roll with your response, because I know you've got plenty to say.
The truth is we don't really know. The Israeli government is saying things. Individuals in the government who are very extremist fascists say things. Other people in society and the media say things. We don't know the precise official policy and aims of the Israelis because they don't know. They have no idea what they want out of Gaza. They don't know how to get out of Gaza. They don't know how to stay in Gaza. They ruled Gaza for, I don't know, 17 years or something, however it was. They controlled it. They settled it. They created settlements. And then they got their ass kicked and they had to leave because Hamas and others fought them, resisted them, and they had to leave. It's because human nature anywhere in the world does not accept being subjugated and dominated by another country or another people. And the Israelis tried this in South Lebanon. They tried it in Gaza. They'll try it in the West Bank, and it won't work. The fundamental human desire and yearning for liberty and dignity will prevail in the end. What the Israelis and the Americans are telling us is that they can live by the motto of give me liberty or give me death, but we can't live by give me liberty or give me death. We have to live by we bend down to your imperial dominance and we will not resist you. And this is not human. This is not how human nature works. The Israelis never understood this. The American government never understood it. And so North Gaza now is what is being cleaned, wiped out, and made uninhabitable temporarily. Whether they stay there and they make a zone of a security zone, or they call it a buffer zone, they might try to do the same thing in South Lebanon. But the amazing thing is they've done this. Even the same people in government have done this before. They controlled South Lebanon for, I don't know, it was like 18 years, I think it was, or from 1982 to 2000, I think. They occupied South Lebanon. They had their own surrogate Lebanese army there, but they were driven out by Hezbollah, just as they were driven out by Hamas and Palestine. So the idea that they can create a buffer zone militarily is not only faulty policy, it's just crazy thinking. It's unnatural analysis. People have lost their mind when they think they can do this, and the reason is because they don't know how to live with Palestinians on the basis of equal rights. And this is what we're offering. We've accepted Israel. We've recognized it. The PLO has recognized it. Hamas has offered coexistence with it. Same with Hezbollah. But neither Israel nor the U.S. want to respond to these offers. They want Israeli Jewish Zionist dominance over this whole area and even beyond just Palestine. They don't want to necessarily occupy Syria or Iran or Iraq or Lebanon, but they want to control the policies of those regions, the people in those regions. So the lesson of the last year or so is that anybody who defies Israel is going to die, and their children and their successors are going to live in bondage, at least ideological bondage, for years and years, because anybody who tries to defy Israel is going to get zapped with some space weapon that they're developing in Israel and California. And this is the message. And nobody in the world either is willing or able to stop this, it seems now. I think people can stop it, of course, but they're somehow unable or unwilling to do it, which, again, we don't know. There's a lot of things we don't know the answers for. But the key thing about northern Gaza, to answer your question, is that the Israelis don't actually have a clear strategy. All they want to do is kill Palestinians, savage them to the point that they are dehumanized, and they stop fighting back. They stop resisting their own subjugation and dehumanization. And this isn't going to happen unless they've developed a gene that you can inject into humans that makes them into like puppies.
That's not going to happen. We're all inspired by the spirit of Palestinian freedom fighters and the resiliency. Rami Khoury, you have a new opinion piece in Al Jazeera called What Sinwar's Death Reveals About War and Peacemaking in Palestine. I think it's important to point out that while the intensive in northern Gaza has been going on for about 3 weeks, really upticked with the assassination of Yahya al-Sinwar a week ago, Israel had long said, Sinwar and the U.S., let's be clear that Sinwar was the primary impediment to a ceasefire. But I'd like you to talk a little bit about what the truth is about his efforts in order to bring this iteration of genocide to an end.
The truth is, and we just, by the way, published, I co-edited a book that people should get. It's a small book. It's called Understanding Hamas and Why That Matters. I co-edited it with Helena Coben, a journalist who's been covering the Middle East for 40, 50 years like me. And what we did is we interviewed five prominent scholars who studied Hamas close up in Gaza and elsewhere, knows the leaders personally. And these scholars are Palestinian and Arab and Westerner. The book is just really a summary of the five interviews verbatim, and it gives you tremendous insights into who these people are. What is Hamas? I'm not saying Hamas is great, or am I saying they're criminals. I'm saying we need to understand why they're doing what they do in the same way that the U.S. should have understood what the Viet Cong were doing and the Taliban were doing before they went and made these ridiculous wars, which the U.S. finally lost in those lands. So it's important to understand what Hamas is. And Yahya Sinwar is probably the epitome of what Hamas is. In other words, he spent most of his life, all of his adult life, fighting back against Israel, trying to do it politically as well as socially and culturally and militarily. What he represents in his death is that he betrayed all the lies that the Israelis had put out about him, that he was hiding underground, dressed like a woman, surrounded by hostages to protect himself, et cetera, et cetera. All of these were lies. And Israel lies all the time in these situations of warfare. We saw it in Gaza many times when they kept lying over and over again about who destroyed this hospital, what was in this hospital that they just destroyed. They keep making accusations against Hamas and others that proved not to be true most of the time. So Sinwar basically represents, first of all, Hamas's thinking. He's not a one-man show. The U.S. portrays saying that he's killed, now we can go on and make a peace deal. That's amateurish imperialism, what I call. This is the U.S. at its amateurish best. The policies of Hamas and the actions of Hamas are the result of very complex deliberations, consultations, elections that go on for years and years and years among all the key constituents of Hamas, including the prisoners in Israel. Once there is a consensus, they have a policy and they elect the leader who pursues this policy. And this is what's happened over the years. Same with Hezbollah in Lebanon. So the Israelis have killed three leaders of Hamas over the last, whatever it is, 40 years. And every time they kill a leader, another one comes by and the policies continue. Not only do the policies continue, they get more militant and more technically proficient. What Hamas has been able to do, whether one supports it or not, and I don't support everything they do, but what they've been able to do is a sign of how they've become more technically proficient at war, at defense, at communications, at other things. So he represented Hamas's philosophy and ideology better than any other single person, because he was out there in the field fighting. We don't know if he was out every day, but he died fighting. And this is what makes Hamas different from the rest of the Palestinian groups, which is that they're the most militant group that insists on using military force, because it's 10 overtures. Hamas made 10 overtures to the U.S. and to Israel and to the U.N. and to others about negotiations to coexist with Israel on terms that are acceptable to both sides and reflect international thinking and U.N. resolutions. The Israelis refuse to answer. The Americans never answered. They just don't want to live in peace with Palestinians, because they don't think the Palestinians are equal to Jews and Israelis. They think Palestinians are just people who are in the way. We've got to get them out of this area so that we can have more Jewish settlements. But not only did Sinwar fully reflect the common thinking of all of Hamas's members, the important thing about Hamas, which you can read about in our book, is that it reflects the wider thinking of the entire Palestinian people through the institutions of the PLO and other political parties, that Hamas has spent huge amounts of time, including Sinwar himself, negotiating common positions among the different Palestinian different Palestinian factions insisting on a common position. Hamas doesn't want to rule Palestine. They want the Palestinian people to live up to their pledge that they will resist until they have independence and decency and dignity and statehood and sovereignty. So that's why Sinwar is important. The Western media portrayals and the official statements about him are comical. They really should be on the old Saturday morning cartoon show. They should make a special show. They don't have Saturday morning cartoons now. You get cartoons all the time. But they should make a special cartoon show that quotes American State Department and White House officials and presidential candidates. Because what they say is most of the time nonsense, not based on facts, based on their ideological distortions, and totally unrealistic. And if you go back over what the U.S. has done in Palestine and also Afghanistan and Iraq and Vietnam and other places, you'll see this is a common thread that runs through a lot of American foreign policy overseas. The U.S. does some good things overseas, of course. It's not all comical and criminal. But in this case, it is all comical and criminal. This is why Sinwar is so important. He refutes all of the assumptions of the U.S. and many in the West.
All right, Rami Khoury, I've got to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
You too. Talk soon. Rami Khoury's article, opinion piece in Al Jazeera, is What Sinwar's Death Reveals About War and Peacemaking in Palestine. Rami Khoury is a distinguished public policy fellow at the American University of Beirut, a journalist and author with 50 years of experience covering the Middle East.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.